everybody. Welcome back to another episode of App Chatter. This is kind of a special edition episode tonight. We are going to be talking about the iPhone 4.0 news that was released today. I am Eric, and I am here, as always, with Lou.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Lou. And Lou and I are not alone today. We have Brian joining us from all the way over at Tech Chatter.
Hey, everybody. How you guys doing?
Hey, how's it going?
All the way over? What am I like?
Yeah, I had to make it sound like you really went out of your way to show up today.
I did,
you
know? Actually. I got out of bed, believe it or not. I was taking a nap.
You lazy bum.
I'm not lazy. No, actually, I'm Brian's sick. Shut up, you.
Yeah, Brian's sick.
and a little snappy. And under the weather. So, you know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Brian's here from Tech Chatter, which is part of our Random Chatter network. And we might also be having Jeff show up. We'll see if he can make it.
I've been on the show before. They know me.
Yeah. Well, we are constantly increasing our audience. So not everybody's heard you before.
I was on the pilot episode.
Yes. Not everybody's heard the pilot episode.
Episode zero.
That's what
this is what nobody heard.
Yeah. Yeah. That says something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Episode zero. All right. So today, as most people know, today being Thursday, April 8th, Apple announced the iPhone 4.0 operating system, and we are going to talk about the announcements that are resulting from that. But first, a couple of quick pieces of news. We talked a little bit about the iPad earlier in the week. This is kind of an odd week because we're doing two App Chatter shows. And thanks, Apple. I've got nothing better to do with my life than to follow you around like a lost puppy every time you want to open your mouth.
Oh, you love it.
Grumble, grumble. Yeah, I know.
Seriously, I'm going to be like, wait, what?
I'm kidding. So, a couple of things about the iPad. There's been some bad news, as we talked about last week, or in the last episode, such as Wi-Fi issues and charging and things like that. A little bit of new information is leaking out. If your iPad is indicating that it's not charging, and I didn't realize this, but apparently it actually displays in the upper right-hand corner the words "not charging" if you plug it in and it's not charging, which is kind of cool. But if it indicates it's not charging when it's plugged in via USB, it may actually be charging.
Yeah,
that's the unofficial interface. Yeah, you know, it's something Apple needs to fix. I'm not trying to defend them, but I am trying to reassure people who have iPads who are trying to charge them off of USB ports. Now, you are going to need a powered USB port, obviously, but if you've got it in, say, Windows computer or something like that. The unofficial Apple weblog, TUAW as we like to call them, ran a test, and they left their charge overnight, and in the morning it was fully charged. So, it probably just charges very slowly, but if you are getting an indicator that it is not charging, you might want to run your own test and see if you're actually getting a full charge at the end.
So, it's not charging. Or it's, God, that came out wrong. It's not that it's not charging. It's that it's not charging to its, you know, with the 10 volts charging. It's only charging at the 5.5 volts or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's part of that seems to be correct. Where it's plugged in, it knows it's plugged in, but it's not getting enough juice to really, you know, charge it quickly enough.
Well, right. I mean, and again, it's still charging. I mean, they from what they said is they whoever the article that you sent out earlier, it actually did top it off. It took it a while, is all.
Yeah. For those who don't know, the iPad comes with a 10-volt charger because it needs that extra power boost, and a lot of the Apple products apparently have... it's not that they have higher powered USB ports, but if a device requests a higher voltage, it will basically overcharge the USB port. It'll kind of like overclock it.
Well, and, it's not overclocking. It's overcharging.
It's not overclocking, but
it sends
I'm
10
sure
volts
some
rather
fancy
than 5.5 or whatever the spec is.
Right. 5.5 is the USB spec.
So. Is it 5 or is it 5.5? I can never remember.
I keep being told it's 5.5. I don't know. It's somewhere around there. I don't care. So... Oh, hey, Jeff is in the chat room. We should bring him into the phone call here.
Skype text thing.
Oh. Are we bringing him in?
Oh, that's me. Sorry.
That's you.
I forgot I was
Brian's
running,
actually running the Skype call tonight. So, all right. I'll wait till Jeff gets in here before I bring up the next thing. Jeff, are you there?
No.
Wait, yes, okay. I am. Okay, I've got to get this straight. Right, yes, I am.
Physically, but not mentally. All right, Jeff is one of the other hosts over at Tech Chatter, and both Brian and I have been, or both, tripping over my own words here, both Brian and Jeff have been around podcasting with me since about 2005, so if Brian starts giving me a hard time and I don't smack him down like I should be, don't worry about it. I'm used to it. So the other thing in the news about the iPad, if you're having Wi-Fi issues, Apple is releasing some documentation saying that it could be due to dual band routers where you have two networks using the same name. And so what they're recommending is you try changing the names, such as adding a G to the end of one name and an N to the end of another name, seeing if that works. If it doesn't, try resetting the iPad's Wi-Fi settings.
That...
Just remember, everyone, with Apple, it just works.
Oh, now, come on. You know, for all of the years of misery that Microsoft has given me, I don't even want to hear it. So, you know, listen, if this and the charging thing solves your problems, great. You know, there are some people who have issues that they're not happy with and they're returning their iPad, and that's fine. I don't begrudge them that. But, you know, hey, if it's just as simple as... You know, I mean, the whole not charging indicator, that can be something Apple can fix very easily through a firmware update or something. And the Wi-Fi settings, I don't know. The point is that there are workarounds for some of this. Try them out first before you return it to the store. So that's it for the news, because we covered most of it earlier in the week. So check out that for more iPad news. I keep tripping over iPhone and iPad and iPod Touch. We need to get rid of the I's and come up with some new names for things. I would have liked the Slate, honestly, but
yeah, but HP's anyway, doing the Slate.
I know.
Yeah, but they could have called it the iSlate.
They had to be buttheads.
And I'm okay with the i, you know, whatevers, but pad, not a great term, but you know.
Well, pad, pod, and phone. I mean, when you're looking at show notes, they all begin with P, and it's just
the iTablet is kind of lame.
It is.
So yeah. It makes more sense to say iPad. And besides, you get iPod, iPad, you know, whatever.
Yeah. It wasn't horrible, and I certainly am not going to go where most people go on the name, but, you know, it could have been better.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's not what we're here to talk about today. We are here to talk about iPhone 4.0.
Well, iPhone OS 4.0.
Yes, because okay. There sure wasn't any talk about hardware. But I understand.
No, there wasn't.
I understand that comes later.
But you
later,
know,
and that's fine.
Since you brought that up, Jeff, let's jump right to that. A lot of people were hoping for a hardware release, not a release, but announcement today. Yes. If you look back over the last few years, though, that's not what Apple does. They release information about the operating system in the spring, and then when they actually announce the release date for the OS in June, that is the same day that they release information about the hardware. So going back, actually, back again to the unofficial Apple weblog, they've got a list here. Last year, the iPhone OS 3.0 was announced and demoed in March, and the 3GS and OS 3 release date was announced June 9th. The year before that, OS announcement was March. The hardware and OS release date announcement was June 6th. So...
So in other
the original
words,
iPhone was released June 29th, the year before that.
So in other words, there's hope.
There is hope.
It's more than hope. I mean,
there's likelihood.
There's got to be something else. I mean, if we don't see hardware that, first of all, uses one of the new Apple chips, I mean, I think that after they put one in the iPad, there's no way that the next chips aren't coming out. The next iPhone isn't going to be based on an Apple chip. It'll have more RAM, and it'll have, you know, a higher def screen and blah, blah, blah.
At a bare minimum, you're going to see probably a chip update and larger capacities, if nothing else.
But I think what we saw today was most of the new features. I would be, right. I would, if I had to make a guess today, I would say a better camera. And I might even say LED flash, but we'll see about that. I'm not. I'd have to see. No forward-facing camera, I don't think. I would be surprised at a forward-facing camera. Or certainly, I'd be surprised at a dual camera. It would either be, it's going to be one or the other. I think most of the hardware features, most of the iPhone features we just saw today.
I tend to agree. I think they're definitely going to make it faster. They're definitely going to make it higher res. But you know, I think the dual cameras is unlikely. It would be interesting to see if they do that that thing that Sprint's doing with the the Wi-Fi hotspot deal. So I don't know.
AT&T issue than anything else.
That does seem unlikely. But AT&T is going to have to step up to the plate as well. I mean, you know, they're not going to want Sprint to eat their lunch on that regard. And I suspect that.
Well, it's not like they're in any danger.
You're always thinking long term. You know,
well, as long as they're the only ones, as long as they're the only ones with the iPhone. Yeah, but we know that's coming to an end at some point.
But even beyond that, I mean, you know, that sort of functionality from the other carriers is going to catch up with them, you know, to some degree. Mm-hmm. And that's a good question. Is as you say on the carrier exclusivity, there's still lots of talk about a Verizon iPhone. It'll be interesting to see if that comes along with the hardware. But we're here to talk about software, right?
Yes.
Right? Cool. That is very correct. That's very astute of you. Okay. So. The announcement today, there were seven tent poles that Steve Jobs mentioned. I'm not going to go through every single little nuance. No kidding.
Seven tent
poles. And it's not very square either. That's
it's kind of long, kind of oblong.
Yeah, I guess so. Hmm. Anyhow, there are going to be over 100 user interface updates, but he focused on seven different tent poles, as he called them. And the first one, of course, was the big one, multitasking. So, this is the one thing that everybody's been complaining about not having for ages now. And this is it's not an app, so I can't say it's the killer app, but this is the killer functionality that people have been wanting, and now they're going to get it, sort of.
But you say sort of. Okay, so let's describe what it is, because I think if executed properly, I think this gives most people what they want in multitasking and doesn't cause the problems that Apple has been saying. Okay, so a lot of times Apple will say, well, we want to do it perfectly, and that's really code for, yeah, we haven't gotten around to it yet. I think in this case, what they've been doing is going along and saying, well, it's going to cause performance issues, it's going to cause stability issues, and it's going to cause battery drain. And what they've done is they've put out a system that, at least on paper, addresses all of those issues, because it's not giving you full multitasking. It's not saying we're going to let the entire application run in the background and you're going to be able to go back and forth between them. Instead, what they're saying is we're going to have these services available, which is a very Apple concept, this idea of, here, we're going to expose these couple of things and let you play with them and do whatever you want, but we're going to maintain control, much like they do on the in OS X with their audio and video with all the core services. That's exactly what they're doing, is they're going to have sort of core multitasking services or whatever they're going to call them. But it's things like background audio. Well, I'll let you talk about specifically what they are. But I think if they only give you those services to play with as a developer, then you can't run something constantly. Is going to drain the battery, because all you're doing is running that one little service.
Right. And that's always been my biggest problem with the concept of multitasking on a phone, as I've talked about before. I do not want to sacrifice stability for the ability to multitask.
Right.
So...
Well, yeah, it's no good, especially on a phone. I mean, it's one thing if your computer has performance issues, but, you know, and I think it's, I forget which podcast I was listening to on this, but, you know, I think Steve really does feel this way, that the first time somebody's at a dinner party and, you know, their iPhone crashes, or they're in the middle of a call and it crashes because something is running in the background. I mean, I think Steve takes that as a personal failure.
That was either MacBreak Weekly or Twit.
Yeah, something like
one
that.
One of the two, they were talking about
but,
that.
But honestly, I feel, you know, every time that happens, Steve Jobs cries, you know?
Yeah, that was Calacanis on Twit.
Yeah. So what we've got basically is we've got seven background services. The first one is background audio. And the idea there is obviously
that you can. Can we get that hallelujah sound that you had?
Oh, you know, I don't have that. No, I don't have my soundboard running. Sorry.
it's
Eric's
That's
call.
Okay.
Well,
that's okay.
It's Eric's show.
My point is made. We're going to try to keep that. Happy about that. That you know, that was the multitasking I really wanted. The rest of this is gravy. That's the one I really wanted. So
it's the one that I really wanted too, because it's the one that I thought makes the iPad. It's the one that I was always going to say is, you know, everybody's like, well, why do you need multitasking? Because on something the size of the iPad, you want to be able to play Pandora while you surf the web. End of story.
Yep.
But then looking at some of these other things, I'm like, I can see some interesting things.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those. So background audio is the first one. And then we've got background location services, which means a lot of people with GPS systems have been complaining that once you leave the GPS, you know, you lose that that turn-by-turn navigation. Not the GPS that comes built into the iPhone, but like the TomTom navigation system or various other turn-by-turn navigation systems.
Well, even the one that comes built in. I mean, one of the things that I found
it doesn't stop working, but it doesn't. I mean, if you leave that app, you can go back to it and pick up right where you left off. But the real problem is if you're relying on audio turn-by-turn navigation, if you switch out to another app to, check your email like you should always do while you're driving, and then you go back to the navigation, well, now you've missed your turn.
Well, no, okay, so here's a big deal. I mean, the thing that I always do is I have to choose between, like, listening to Twit live, which I will do a lot of times in the car, and or Pandora or whatever other streaming audio, and following directions. So that's been an issue.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is a lot of people complain that you can't listen to music while you're doing turn-by-turn navigation either. So now between the background audio and the background location, you can switch between your music application and your navigation system and not lose anything from either one. Which is kind of cool. At least, I think so.
Now, let me make sure I understand how this works.
Okay.
Because, to be honest, earlier I was sort of half watching or half reading the live blogs. So, when the app is in the background, it's using no CPU resources, in theory, and thus it's sort of on standby, for lack of a better term. So, it's almost hibernated, the app. Is that the idea here? Assuming it's not doing anything like streaming or that sort of thing.
It sounds to me like it's partially that, but realistically what it is, so yes, it has the capability that if it's not actually doing anything, then it's not taking any cycles. Obviously, if it's doing something, if it's decoding an audio stream or something else like that, then yeah, it's taking CPU cycles. But what the app does, that's one of the reasons they were saying there's no real reason to run a task manager, because if the app isn't actually doing anything, then it isn't taking any processing cycles. So if it's not accessing those services, if it doesn't put in, I don't know, and how it actually functions, I don't know. I haven't tried to develop for it yet or do anything.
You haven't?
No, not yet.
That's
going to take a little bit to get used to, because if you don't know when an app is still active or not in the background, I guess it really doesn't matter, but it's going to take a little bit to get used to that, I think.
Well,
That's why I'm suspecting that it's something like a hibernate function where it takes the memory state, writes it into storage memory instead of active memory, and then just kind of leaves it there because it's not doing anything. And that frees up the rest of the RAM, which, as we've discussed before, is relatively limited, 256 megs on the ones that'll be able to multitask to do whatever it is that you're otherwise doing. When you switch back to that app, then it can page it, for lack of a better term, out of storage or, you know, hard drive or paging or whatever they want to call this thing, and then bring it back in exactly the same state that you left it in, so you don't lose your place in the game or, you know, whatever it is, whatever, you know, that application was that you just paged back.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, which I think that's a pretty big benefit, I think. And not just that, but you've got the fast app switching, too. And I guess, I don't know, I got the impression that's only relevant to apps that are currently running. If it's not currently running, obviously you're going to have to load up, you know, a map for a game or graphics files or something like that. There is a loading process, but at least if you've got stuff open already, it's going to basically hibernate whatever part of the app is not being used at the time. If it's not one of these other services like the background audio, the background location, task completion is another one, which I'll come back to in a second. But so you've got that hibernate feature, so that facilitates fast switching between the apps, which is another one of the things they listed. So task completion, if you start downloading something and then you don't want to sit around and wait for it to download, so you go back to the main screen and you go to a different app. Well, right now it terminates the download. The only thing that will continue to download in the background is if you're using the iTunes Store or the App Store. So now, if you're, let's say, downloading a comic book in the Marvel Comics application, you don't have to sit around and wait for it to finish. You can exit out of the app, and that app will finish downloading, and once that task is completed, it will terminate itself. Or rather, more specifically, it will just stop using any process.
Right. You say terminate itself. I just imagine the app going, I'll just pop off and shoot myself in the head.
It will take the gun and place it to its chin. It pulls the trigger. Yeah.
Actually, what it does is it comes along and it says, I'll be back.
wrong comic book franchise. But anyway, push notifications. Is there anything different from this than what we've already got? I mean, were they just listing this because it's kind of a background service?
I'm not sure. I don't really know. It wasn't clear whether there was any differentiation from the existing push notifications now. What might be able to happen is it might be able to handle them differently, perhaps. Like an application could be aware of the push notifications if they come in. Mm-hmm. And perhaps launch from them or something. I don't know.
I'm not sure I want that.
Well, no, not like automatically launch from them. Okay. But like if you were to get this works now. I've been noticing that if I get a Facebook notification, for example, and I unlock my phone within a certain amount of time of receiving that notification,
it pulls up
the Facebook app. Maybe they're talking about something along those lines. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the push notifications might just be that even though we already have them, they're part of the background services, so they had to be included in the list. Local notifications, though, is new, and I take that to mean like basically reminders and such in different applications. Like the example they used in the demo was a kind of a TV guide type of app where it sends you a notification that a TV show that you watch is on. So that's not something that really has to be pushed down from a remote server somewhere. Well, actually, right now, the only way to do it is exactly that. You would have to push it down from a server, which means you'd have to have an account online somewhere and have it in the cloud and all that kind of stuff. This will allow local apps to push notifications within the device itself, which I think is great.
Well, what's interesting is a lot of these things already have analogs in the existing system. They're just reserved for Apple apps.
For example,
right now, iCal will alert you when it's time for an alert or whatever comes up.
Yeah.
So here's my question. Can I use this is the thing that I immediately thought of. Can I tie in the background location services so that it keeps track of my location, and then also the local notifications so that it knows when I get to a particular area? Like say I get to work and I sit down, and I'm at my desk or whatever, then it knows that I'm at work, and so my GTD app could say, okay, you're in the work context. This is what you need to do now. Or
I totally believe that specifically OmniFocus will probably do that. They've already got contexts attached to GPS locations.
So it knows where you are?
That's already existed. Well, kind of. Like if you have a context for home and a context for work and a context for, your local grocery store or something like that, you can assign it map coordinates. You can either do it when you're there and say they use my current location, or you can pull it up on a Google map or something like that. So if you're out driving around or, you drive to work, anything that's a context within X number of miles from that specific location you're at right now, you can go to a context list that's like, nearby, I think it's called. I'd have to look at it. I don't really use it. I don't get out much anymore. But the point is, if you hit that nearby button, it will show you the contexts in order of proximity. So what I see happening is if you go and you drive to the grocery store, it would be able to pop up with a notification saying, hey, you're at the grocery store now. Don't forget that you needed milk and bread and Coke and whatever else.
Yeah.
And, okay, as you're driving by.
It'll do it in the background. So if you don't have the app running, it'll hopefully pop up a notification for you right then and there. Otherwise, if you didn't open up OmniFocus, right, it wouldn't be able to do that.
I'll admit, that's pretty darn cool.
But remember that if you have something running but it's not using any processes, it can just sit there quietly and shut the heck up. And then it doesn't need to ever do anything except when you drive by something that triggers it.
Exactly.
So you can just leave it run.
The only way that I can see that happening is if there's an engine that's running constantly. So a notifications engine or a push engine or whatever you want to call it, that's running constantly, that's taking that job on. So when, whatever that application you said, you know, it sort of registers itself and it says, hey, when you get to this location, wake me up, you know, and then I'm going to do something, you know.
Right. So basically, the background location service would be what would be relevant there. And anytime the background location area changes, it would basically ping OmniFocus.
Yeah, and if OmniFocus changes, but hopefully, because that would be, that would use a significant amount of CPU. But specifically, that it says when I find this location or when I get to this time or when I get to this, you know, whatever it is, you know, then wake me up and then I'll tell you what I want to do. I don't know.
Based on what they said during the presentation, though, you know, rather than like the specific GPS antenna, it can basically use the cell phone towers as a location determination, and it uses less power that way, less battery life, etc. And it can use that in the background location to let applications know when you're leaving different areas and entering new ones. And it doesn't actually have to be the real GPS antenna itself. So, yes, GPS would use a lot more processing from the CPU, but if you go with the cellular tower location system instead, then maybe not. Because they were using an example of GPS for navigation, and yet the cellular towers for things like social networking. Like, I think Looped was the example they used, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I don't know Looped, so I don't know much about it, but...
Well, I think this kind of service makes a lot more sense when you're in your local area that you're always in, you know, around home, around work. You know, maybe the app will learn things of where you go, where you normally shop, and kind of set things up as locations so that it doesn't have to constantly scan with the GPS antenna all the time to waste battery and CPU cycles.
Right.
You know, the smarter the apps get, the more they learn, the more this can be very valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the multitasking overall, I think. I was really, really worried about it. But, and you know, the interface too. What do you guys think of the interface? You double tap the home button and it pops up a single row of icons at the bottom that you can swipe left and right through, and you change, and that's kind of your alt tab, so to speak. What do you guys think of that?
I think it's great.
Okay.
Wow.
I've heard mixed comments about it, so I was wondering. Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
I said didn't see it, so I really don't want to, you know. Sorry.
Yeah, I think until we get to play with that, it's going to be hard to see if we like it or not.
Yeah, they did have it up on the screen for the presentation today, but I guess if you didn't watch the QuickTime streaming thing that Apple posted later on in the day, you probably didn't get to see that. I did get a look at it, and it's pretty slick. I don't know. I think it'll depend on... there's still some factors that we don't know yet and won't know until we get to play around with it, but so far, so good. I think that the first of the 7 tent poles is a success so far. I think multitasking, this is a good way to implement it. Folders, I don't know. I like the idea of folders. I finally hit the 11-page limit.
Wow.
11 full pages, yeah. Which is kind of embarrassing, actually. It's not really something to brag about.
I'm kind
of
surprised you would say that out loud, really.
Yeah, I know. I don't use all of the things, but you know, we got the App Chatter podcast, and so I download things and I try them out, and you know,
you get
so
that page of fart app, so,
and then
yeah, page and a half actually. Right. No, I can honestly say I've never downloaded a fart app.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's something close to it on there.
No, I can't think of anything. I've never downloaded the lightsaber app. I've never downloaded a tip calculator
app.
No, yeah, I know. I'm a loser.
That was actually pretty cool.
There's apparently one now where you can choose which of the Star Wars characters you want, and then like different motions will do different things. So you can actually battle against somebody else over Bluetooth. And like if you do a certain type of swing, the other person would have to do a different type of swing to block it.
Okay, that's getting extraordinarily geeky, but you know.
Yeah, it's like LARPing with an iPhone.
Yeah, for someone who doesn't have the app, he knows a lot about them.
Oh, I see how it's going to be. Okay. All right. So, folders. What you do to create a folder on the iPhone is you take one icon and you drag it over top of the other.
Mm-hmm. Pretty simple. That's it. Straightforward. Yeah. I like
it.
Simple.
Seems pretty good to me.
I like this a lot.
It pops up a folder. It's interesting. They call it folders, and realistically what they're doing is they're creating groups, but you know, it's right. Folders because they're trying to say, oh, it's just like OS X.
But is a folder not merely a container for a group?
Well, in OS X, it's not in OS X. It has its own thing.
I know. But whatever. I know. All right. But it functionally, as far as the user interface is concerned, they want you to think of it as a folder. When you drag an icon on top of another one, it kind of pulls it out of the screen, out of the background. There's a title for the folder up at the top, and it will automatically try to determine the title based on the category of the applications. Now, I don't know what it does if you try to drag a game over a utility. I don't know which one it picks, but regardless, you can rename it.
I
don't
know how it knows that an application is a game. I think
there's got to be something in the metadata of the application.
I'm guessing it's based on its location in the App Store.
It is. It is based exactly on that. And it's got to be embedded somewhere in the application. So, but that's how the folders work. Apparently, though, they didn't cover this in the keynote, but some developers were looking into it, and you can only have 12 items per folder, though you may have as many folders as you like.
Presumably up to 2,000, but, you know, at that point it's...
Well, no, you can have up to 11 pages, so theoretically you could have 2,000 apps because you could have 11 pages of nothing but folders.
Yeah, I want to see. Well, I don't want to see the guy, and I don't want to meet the guy who does that.
Yeah.
He's way too geeky for me. Don't do that, Eric, please.
It's got to be either Woz or Andy Anatko, one of the two. We'll see. You can put folders in the dock, which I think is kind of cool, which basically increases the functionality of the dock, in my opinion.
It does.
By the way, if you have an iPad, a lot of people don't know this, but you can put 6 icons in the dock on the iPad, which is kind of nice. But I don't know. I like the concept of the folders. I don't know about... I guess as long as you can title them whatever you want, I guess maybe you wouldn't need more than 12 per folder anyway. I don't know. If you are the type of user who has a lot of icons and you download... Like if you're a news junkie and you've got the Time Magazine app and the CNN app and the NPR app... And the Life Hacker app and the Engadget app, et cetera, you could have 2 or 3 pages just of news applications and website bookmarks and things like that. So,
no, I mean, I think this is kinda good. I actually like this. I like the folders. I think they're going to be very, very useful. I think it helps to keep things organized. If for no other reason than it gives you quicker access. I mean, most people won't have 11 pages of them, but honestly, well, sure. 9 pages of apps, which I think is what I've got right now, is too much. I would rather, swipe to tap, or tap into a folder and then tap into an application. Now, can folders contain folders, or is it one level? Is it only one layer?
I believe it's only one layer.
Okay, so, which is fine. But even so, that gives me 2 layers of organization, which will allow me to get to pretty much anything that I need to within the. It's very difficult because I do find myself using about 2 pages of apps regularly enough that I kind of have to swipe back and forth. And every once in a while, I have to go to the end and tap on something. But I think the folders are going to allow me to just make that a tap navigation versus a swipe, swipe, swipe. Right. Oh, crap, that one didn't go swipe. So the other thing that I found is if I know it's at the end, I've started using the search. I started swiping the other direction from the home page and then just tapping the first few letters of it and hitting search and letting it find it that way, almost using it just exactly like I use Spotlight on the Mac.
Yeah, I just don't like having to pop up a keyboard in order to search for an app.
But I'm saying it's easier to do that, to type 3 characters than it is to try get to something on the last page.
It's not just an issue of how many apps you have, too, because my wife, I think, has probably only got maybe 3 or 4 pages of apps, but she doesn't organize any of them. So if I need to use her phone for something, it's a nightmare trying to find anything. So I think that this would do well for a lot of people just to be able to organize all of their games into a folder, all of their social networking into a folder. And then as you add new apps, you know, it puts it that's okay. As you add new apps, it puts it in the first spot available, regardless of whether that's just where you want to drop it or not. So I think the folders are really going to help with organizing your desktop there. So, by the way, a quick note, this isn't one of the tent poles, but there are a bunch of other little things that they announced, and one of those is you can put a wallpaper on your background now. And I know everybody out there is going to run out and get the wallpaper for our podcast network and put it there.
good luck with that.
I'll be honest. This is something, you know, it's kind of like, in Gadget, when they were live blogging it, they kind of went, really? A background screen, Steve? This is a big deal? And it's not a big deal because, you know, frankly, it should have been in from the beginning. But I kind of like being able to customize my look and be able to, you know, see a little what's behind it and, you know, have my background screen mean more than just when it's locked. So this is something that I'm kind of like, okay, it's about time, but thank you. Finally.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world, but it's something that should have been there from the beginning. And the other thing about it is when you start thinking about when they were talking on the live blog, I think they're making a joke out of the fact that he's actually showing us how to change the screen. We all know how to do that on almost any device, but I think it's nice to have it. I'd like to be able to change all the sounds.
Yeah, but I'm hoping that's maybe one of the other 93 things that, because there's just, I don't know. I want more choices with alarm sounds, with text messaging sounds, with email notifications. It's great that you can put in ringtones, but why can't you set that to any notification? Totally. I mean, that's all the phone ring is it's a notification sent by the phone app.
Yeah, you know, the folks who have jailbroken are laughing at us right now.
Yes, they are.
I know.
Well, they're laughing at us about a lot of things, including multitasking, I think. But, you can, you know, say any ringtone you like, right? You know that? I mean, any ringtone in the world.
Yeah.
It's just the SMS and the calendar reminders that are the same as, the email and calendar reminders are the same as everybody else's on Earth. So if I've been in offices where, you know, there's six people, or, you know, meeting where there's six people with an iPhone, one of them has their email sound turned on and it goes off and six people reach for their iPhones because they don't know if they actually turned it off or not. You know, and that's just a no brainer. That's just stupid beyond belief that you can't change that sound. It would be unbelievably simple. I can't think of any reason why you can't do it. And yet you're locked into that one sound and it drives me up a wall. And it's why, frankly, part of the reason that I leave my email notification sounds turned off all the time.
Probably because Steve doesn't want somebody making the SMS notification sound or the email sound. Yo, jerk, you got mail! It doesn't fit with the iPhone.
Yeah, but on the other hand, he lets them do it for the ringtones. Which may be simply a concession to, you know, there are people out there for whom ringtones are extremely important, and if he didn't give them flexibility, they just wouldn't buy an iPhone.
Either that or he wanted to make the extra... It may be a concession to
the fact that it's $1.99 to get ringtones from the Apple iTunes store. Yeah.
Because let's not forget the little... I mean, sorry, jumping ahead a little bit. Let's not forget there's a huge financial incentive for Apple getting iPhone OS 4 on as many devices as possible.
You think there's a financial incentive? We'll, do we need to talk about profit margins on the iPad? Just kidding.
Oh, I'd love to talk about the profit margins on the iPad.
We should talk about that on a future show.
So. This is a happy show. This is a happy place.
Actually, Brian and I mostly agree on this. We were having an argument on Brian's Facebook about it with somebody else. So.
Well, I don't have a problem with them having a profit margin.
That's me neither.
Fine. Anyway, all right. So the next one is enhanced email. Hey. I gotta say, I like this one. Unified inbox. So if you've got multiple email accounts, you can get everything in one single inbox, which is awesome. Jeff, you had an issue with this for a long time now, haven't you? You hated that.
It wasn't so much that that's not the one that solves my problem. Because I like actually having them quite separate. I'll have my work email in one mailbox, and I'll have my personal email in another, and I like it that way. I don't want to mix those two together. But what I love is that you've got now got fast switching between between mailboxes. And so instead of having to hit back, back, forward, forward to switch between two mailboxes, it's like two clicks or one click or something along those lines. And that's exactly what it should have been from the beginning. So that.
So one of the guys in the chat room just asked, you can still divide up the inbox, right? You can still have a separate inbox for different accounts.
Yes,
you absolutely do. It's just there is now also one unified email box.
Excellent. And you can now also have multiple exchange accounts.
Yes.
Which is very cool.
Yes, that's very cool because, frankly, I was very frustrated because I could only have work or I could have Gmail for my calendars, but not both. So now I can do that. Yay.
That's very good.
As we talked about a few episodes ago, there's a hack where if you set Gmail up as an exchange account instead of a Gmail account, you can get push email from Gmail, and you can also have it sync your calendars and your contacts.
Exactly. And that's what I wanted to do. But if you've got Exchange you for work, you're out of luck.
Exactly. Mm. But now you're all set. Another cool thing that I really miss, you know, I'm getting by without it, and that's fine, but I would like to have it, and that's that you can organize emails by thread. For example, like you could in Gmail.
Well, you see, that is fairly unique, at least in my experience. I don't have anything else that does that other than Gmail. And it actually kind of, I won't say that it causes me issues, but it's unexpected. I'll be going to look for an email that I knew I sent or that I knew that somebody had sent me and I had replied to, and I want to go back and look through it, and I have to like retrain myself. Okay, don't go back into your sent folder or into that folder. Just look up. It's different because the Outlook doesn't do that, and most of the other email clients that I've ever used don't do that. So
I had the same issue when I switched to Gmail about a year and a half ago, and it was like, this is really kind of strange, but I got used to it. And then when I started using email on the iPhone, I was like, wait, where's that other? Oh, it's down further. So I'm kind of glad this is going to work the same way Gmail does.
My issue is that I've used Outlook for something like 14 years or something along those lines. So I'm so oriented toward that when I switched to Gmail, which was 2 or 3 years ago, and I love the search feature, I still have not gotten used to the threaded capability. What's interesting, though, just as a quick side note, is that Outlook 2010, which incidentally is free for anybody, so feel free to download it and check it out if you're interested in use Exchange at work or something along those lines, and they let you. Uses threaded email. It does the same thing.
That's so, the beta, right? That's not the full.
It is the beta. That's correct. And it's free for like the next 6 months or something. So it's quite sweet.
Cool. The other thing you can do, Brian, go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead.
It's because you're sick.
Yep.
That's it. And also because you're ill.
And also because I'm riding the mute button.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember which state I have to like look over at the window to see which state I've actually left it in before I cough up a lung on the microphone. So.
I got to get me one of those, a mute Brian button.
Yes,
I think that could come in handy, especially like on tech chatter and.
Can I get one of those in real life?
One can dream.
Oh, I see how it's going to be.
I was going to say I'm surprised he's been hitting the mute button. Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. This is awesome. Rip on Brian
you
Day.
You do know that, anyway. That if I hit push the red button, that everybody goes away, right?
Yeah, I've got to call everybody back.
Oops, I'm sorry.
All right, enough picking on Brian.
The other thing about the enhanced email is... I accidentally did a few minutes ago, but that's beside the point.
Oh, great. So you can also open attachments with apps, which is kind of cool. I mean, I don't think it's a killer feature, but, well, I assume that you could email yourself an MP3 and then play it in the iPod player. You could email yourself an EPUB ebook and open it in iBook, or you could, document support, like for Word docs and Excel docs and stuff. I thought that kind of already existed, didn't it? Maybe only
as a viewer. It opened the viewer.
Right. So this will actually open it up in, I guess, whatever the associated app is. So this is something that hasn't really been used on the iPhone yet, so I assume it's good because it's pretty cool when I do it on my computer, which I've been doing for many, many, many years now, so it would be kind of nice to see that on the iPhone, too.
Yeah, I guess I was just trying to think of what apps would use an attachment.
Yeah, I think really it's going to probably be for documents. I think that's how most people are going to use it.
Well,
just Word documents.
You know, hold on. We're thinking about this from a very app, from a very iPhone centric. Remember, this is also going to work on the iPad. So remember, on the iPad, you'll also have things like OmniGraffle, and you'll have pages and numbers, and
right.
So there's a very good chance that you might send yourself something over email, and you'll want to open it in a something you can edit it in.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Well, on the iPhone right now, you've got documents to go, and there are other doc editors and spreadsheet editors. But yeah, exactly that. I think that for most people, that's primarily how they're going to end up using it. And it's one way in which the iPhone so far the iPad is not like a computer or a laptop. And this kind of bridges that gap a little. So, you know, that's kind of cool. The next up is iBooks, which I don't know that there's much to talk about it. I'm kind of excited about it. We talked in the iPad show earlier in the week that the Amazon Kindle application for the iPad actually had a leg up over iBooks in the sense that you could also use it on your iPhone and you have Whisper Sync. So no matter where you leave off on which device, you will always be right where you left off.
Yeah, but we had to know that was coming. I mean, that was one of those things where, wow, they're putting iBooks on the iPhone. Who
wasn't
could
a big surprise.
Guess?
Yeah, I don't think it's that big a surprise
no technical
at all.
Reason
the
that
only thing is,
happened.
Some people were expecting them to have released it as a universal app, and I can understand that expectation. And so some people were speculating, well, if they weren't going to do it, then they're probably not going to do it at all. But yeah, this isn't a big surprise. Like I said, there's not really a whole lot to say about it. It's the same iBooks app as what's on the iPad. And, you know, I'm happy about it, but why that needed to be one of the seven tentpole things, I don't know. I guess they just want to keep talking about iBook.
I'm guessing that's exactly what it is. Is they want to keep the visibility for that very high.
Right.
They want to keep people thinking in terms of, you know, and add value to the iPad. Product by saying you can even extend that functionality. You know, that iBook functionality into your iPhone. So if you're walking around and you don't have your iPad with you, you know, yada yada yada. So. I can see why they did it. It's kind of, you know, everybody sort of assumed it was coming.
You know,
but they did have to they probably had to confirm it, because if nothing else, you know, people would have said, you know, hey, what about iBook on iPhone? You know,
you so. Talked about. I mean, yeah. we sort of skirted around it, but you remember that the keynote, the announcement didn't start with, hey, let's talk about iPhone OS 4. He started off talking about the first 5 days of the iPad launch, and he gave some hard numbers. He told us 450,000 iPads had actually been put into the hands of consumers. So those 700,000 numbers are probably channel numbers. He said 600,000 iBooks had been sold, and this one actually kind of surprised me. 3.5 million iPad applications had been downloaded in 5 days. That is staggering.
Yeah, that's got to be pretty disappointing for him.
Yeah.
I bet they were hoping for more.
I love that the other thing he told us was that Safari has a 64% market share for mobile browsing.
That's very impressive.
And I think it comes, quite frankly, straight from the fact that they've got a decent. It's the first really good browser on at least an American based mobile device.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's because Opera doesn't make one for the iPhone. So.
Well, that's certainly part of it.
I figured if you were going to take that side of it, I kind of had to step in for you on this.
Well, you'll also notice, incidentally, that data was specifically USA. So it excluded Nokia's, a lot of Nokia's stuff, and the Symbian stuff, and Opera, which is much more popular in Europe than it is in the United States. So,
one of the people in the chat room was just pointing out that, one pointed out, Apple customers like to pay a lot. Talking about the 3.5 million apps.
There are a lot of free ones, but not enough.
That's the thing. Here's the thing. The top apps in the App Store right now for the iPad, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, they're expensive. But they're Pages, which is $10, Keynote, which is $10, Numbers, which is $10, and then you've got a few high-profile games by some high-profile developers. But the reality is, if you go back and look at the quantity of applications out there, a lot of them are free, and a lot of them are $5 or less. Now, are those ones everybody wants? Well, no, because everybody wants to get, you know, Plants vs. Zombies.
Not everybody.
And Pages.
Yeah.
Everybody should. So the point is that you know, yeah, you're going to get the high profile name brand apps right out of the gate right now. And, you know, and that's going to scare a lot of people off. Those, I bet those prices are going to drop by a couple of dollars. But as things even out and we get more developers working on iPad software, we're going to find that the prices aren't quite as scary as they look right now. So anyway, and what was the other thing? Oh, the 9 or so apps per iPad. Yeah, that does kind of surprise me a little bit. And earlier in the week, it was even less. I think it was like 3 apps per iPad. And I'm thinking, you buy an iPad and you don't download anything for it?
Well, they couldn't get the Wi-Fi working.
Crunch.
Nice.
All right. Well, getting back to the show
I
here.
I could have said they couldn't get the darn thing charged, but we solved that one earlier in the show.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the enterprise stuff. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, but Jeff, you've got a lot of experience as a network engineer, network administrator. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you thought about the enterprise aspect
of things? Tell you, these improvements are going to make the iPhone a real... Now, I don't know the exact extent, but based on what I knew of the limitations that the 3G and 3GS had and the absolute screwing that Apple did of people with on the 3G with network security, this is going to make it a huge deal for the iPhone and the enterprise. With the data protection, what they mean by data protection is you can encrypt. If you're connecting to a company exchange server, the company exchange server can force the entire iPhone to encrypt everything on it. And that's something that existed in the 3GS, but they're apparently improving it here, which makes it a more effective solution. Because what you're concerned about, you know, from a business perspective is, what if somebody steals the CEO's iPhone? You know, now they can send email as them. They can clone it and look at every email they've ever gotten and all the documents they store on and all that, so that fun stuff. So it's very important that they have that sort of security. Mobile device management, what they're talking about there is the ability to do things like remote wipe your iPhone. So if somebody steals the CEO's iPhone, they can remote wipe it and then they can't get to that data. Hopefully you get to it before they clone it. SSL VPN is also huge. SSL VPNs are becoming much, much more popular in the workplace than the old PPTP VPNs, which a lot of people were using. Isn't that a great great example of how much we love acronyms? PPTP VPN.
So. Yeah, I think somebody's a little too bored. They can't come up with a better name for it.
But that's sort of been the...
they should call it the iTunnel.
Well, yeah, SSL VPN is really what most people are using now. So.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, they're very much switching to it because it gives you functionality in more restrictive network environments that you
want. Yeah, it transits firewalls much more easily.
Exactly. So that's going to be huge. I mean, all of these are, and then support for Exchange Server 2010, which is coming out later this year, is another important thing. So all of these features make the iPhone a much better offering for enterprise areas, and it's something that they haven't emphasized before. I think what may be even more significant than the features that they're talking about are really the fact that they're emphasizing it, that they're pointing it out, that it made it in the keynote, which I don't think it did in previous ones. So as a network engineer, I'm really looking forward to being able to sell iPhones, you know, to the higher ups, as you know, these are a real option for us. And for those who have security concerns, you know, you've got some weapons to say this is a real viable device. So these are actually a pretty big deal. Not so much you know, for us consumer oriented people, but for the enterprise, I think it's going to be.
I unfortunately don't think there are the people that are really security concerned are going to the paranoia level, where I'm actually in the government, or at least in the part of the government that I work with. That not only are they going to have to, that all email must now be all, get this, all email has to be encrypted and signed with a PKI certificate, which means that even the stuff on your BlackBerry, in order to read or send, you have to have a Bluetooth smart card reader that connects to your BlackBerry, and so that allows you to digitally sign and encrypt stuff that goes in and out over your BlackBerry.
That is, well, yes, that's... that's not true for blanket for all government related communications, but it is effectively for like all of the important ones. Yes, and that's
an MCI email will be 100% encrypted when this effort is done.
Yep.
Okay. And not all government contracting email is going to be.
Yeah. And frankly, I can't fault them. You know, email tampering on the internet is absolutely a valid concern.
I've had to clean up enough spillage issues at my last company. I'm not going to get into the details here because every company has it. That's, I'm not dissing my old company, but yeah, I'm pretty happy about at least this step, and I know that it's not going to be enough, certainly not for government. As Brian pointed out, the government itself is not going to even care about this. They're going to be like, nope, not good enough.
Yeah.
But well, at least some of the government contractors now, of which there are like
the
gazillion.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. The problem comes in that, for example, if our government customers, this actually kind of irritates me. Our government customers, this is not Apple's fault, and so it's a little off topic, but our government customers send an email that's encrypted. I can't view it at all unless I go into my office, sit down at my desk or my laptop, wherever it is, SSL into the server and authenticate to it. So like even if they just say, hey, can you meet me for lunch? Nope, sorry. iPhone, web client, nothing. I don't have a choice. I've got to figure out some way to do a full authenticated email client.
Yep. Now, well, and that's how they want it.
Aside from those security problems for the government, what does this mean for the average, you know, large business? Is this going to be something that's going to give RIM a good run for their money now? Is this good enough, Jeff?
iPhones have been killing RIM.
Really?
In the business area. It's not, you know, it's not huge, but it's definitely a trend. EAS, Exchange Active Sync, which is the protocol that we're really talking about here, and it's for connection to Exchange servers, and I find it interesting that, you know, it sort of talks about enterprise, and what it really means is Microsoft Exchange, because it's almost the de facto standard in American business these days for messaging clients. But anyway, you're using the Exchange Active Sync protocol, and because EAS is free with any version of Exchange, and costs you nothing to implement and nothing to make it fully functional, other than the SSL certificate, which, you know, is $800, and those are the expensive ones. You know, RIM's been getting its lunch handed to it because a Bez server costs $3,000, and then $500 a year, and this forced RIM recently to make available for their small and medium businesses, the ones that don't use the management functionalities or just using the email functionalities. And a little bit of the remote wipe type stuff, you know, without any mobile app distribution and that sort of thing. To release something called Bez Express, BlackBerry Enterprise Server, for those of you out there who don't know what I'm talking about, which is what allows BlackBerry's to interface with Microsoft Exchange servers, Lotus Notes servers, you know, enterprise-class messaging systems. So they've put out a free alternative because they were just getting their lunch handed to them by the EAS-based solutions. You know, at that point, everybody who used Exchange had free mobile email. So really, I think this RIM's been getting its lunch handed to it, and in part because the iPhone has started to become a real viable player in this regard. So now it's going to be interesting to see with, you know, digital signatures and the requirement for encryption and those sorts of things becoming more and more important, particularly for critical business communications. You might see, you know, Apple's still got some catch up to do, but frankly, in an EAS connection, everything's SSL encrypted anyway. So it is encrypted end-to-end, but it's not digitally signed. So that is a little bit of a difference between what Brian's talking about and what this phone is capable of.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. Well, if that went over everybody else's head, don't worry about it. No, but those are good points, and I think that this is going to be a very, very, very big deal to a lot of people. Just everybody else isn't going
to
care.
Just nobody who's actually listening to this podcast. Got it. No problem.
Probably.
I love how in the announcement that Steve moves directly from that into the Game Center.
Yes. Lou, why don't you talk a little bit about the Game Center? You've been a little quiet
here. Sure. The yeah, in one respect, I think this is a nice move forward by Apple to give us a pad to be able to compare ourselves with and get some leaderboards up and that kind of stuff that we can already do on other networks like Plus and OpenFaint. But it's just being Apple doing it themselves, it's built into everything we're doing. Every game's going to use it, I guess. So it's going to be a very nice system to work with, I think.
Yeah, this is just going to be a preview, and I guess the real one's coming out in the fall. But this is basically, it looks like it's going to be a social networking system for gaming. You're going to be able to friend people. There's going to be matchmaking for multiplayer. And what I found interesting, after going back and listening to the presentation itself is that it's going to be based on the level and or ability of the player. So it's going to try to match you up with people of similar skill levels.
Which I'm glad, because I'll stop getting beat by 12-year-olds.
quite the contrary. Maybe on things like Words with Friends, I can play against 12-year-olds and maybe win a game or two.
I don't know. I'd put my kid against you and Scrabble any day, Sparky.
Hey, I'm very good at puzzle games and a lot of word games too, but for some reason Scrabble specifically just I look at the board and my brain just shuts off.
I think I played like 12 Words with Friend games. I think I've won two. It's terrible. I have bad
rules. I had a word that scored 107 points.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And it was quartet. Nice. And the last couple of letters also spun off and formed a couple of other words at the end. I was very impressed. I still lost the game. That's how bad I am.
I pulled juror for 70.
Oh, that's not bad.
Nice.
Anyway, so the Game Center, it looks pretty interesting, and it's also going to have achievements. So basically, it's going to be like Open Faint or Plus Plus only. It looks like the matchmaking for multiplayer is going to be a little bit more extensive. And I don't know, I guess this is probably going to put those other two out of business, right?
I would imagine. Because I imagine it's be built into any game that wants to use it, right?
Well, and I guess if you've got popular enough games and you're already in Open Faint or Plus Plus, you know, they could theoretically hold on to it. I mean, there's nothing forcing the games to do this. It's just you're going to be opening yourself up to so many more users. Mm. If you go with Apple. But this is another one of those situations where Apple is taking what other people are doing and doing it themselves and doing it better, and that's great. But basically, I think it's going to run these other two guys out of town. So, but we'll see. Now we'll see how well it works and which games it works with. And maybe the other two will stick around. I mean, there's nothing saying that have to go away. There's no reason there can't be other social networks there. So we'll see. The more controversial one is iAd.
This is here we go.
I think Brian's got a soapbox already prepared standing next to him right there.
I am reserving judgment until I see what happens. There's a couple of things I didn't know. Essentially, but just to kind of give you the lay of the land for the people that weren't paying attention, so iAd essentially is a mobile advertising platform. It's Apple is going to give developers the opportunity, and it wasn't entirely clear. The ad has to be written to accept it, or the app, rather, has to be written to accept ads. Is that correct? So if you want to make an ad-free application, and it is free, you can still do that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So apps that are currently free and non-ad supported can bypass this and just say, here, take it. Just fine.
Correct.
But if you use this set of APIs, essentially what you do is you allow Apple to sell ads on your app. And then the ads are I loved the little dig. Did you catch the little dig at Adobe? The ads are written in HTML5. They're interactive and they're dynamic and they use video and they use everything else. But he's like, and all this is done in HTML5, so you don't need to use any, you know, strange languages or strange platforms or anything else like
that. He did not actually say that.
He said, I wrote down the quote.
He said, and this is all done with HTML5. He did not say anything about, so you don't have to use
I thought he did. Well,
might have been in the question and answer session afterwards. It was not in the main presentation. I just got done listening to it before the show.
Okay.
But it was kind of obvious. I mean, the entire audience laughed when he said that.
Yeah. It was a dig at Adobe. It really was. And then we need to talk about the other part of that happened when they actually read the developer's kit, the SDK terms. Have you been following that?
Maybe. Which part are you referring to?
This is the fact that now the new iPhone developer's kit says that any app...
I know what you're getting
how
at.
You read there's one section that they've added that says, depending on how you read it, that you can't use an intermediary compiler. So in other words, you can't... Supposedly, Adobe with Flash CS5 was going to... have a layer that would allow you to take your Flash and output essentially Objective-C, which you could then upload to the App Store as an iPhone application. Right. So they were going to say, you know, develop your app in Flash and then make it an iPhone application. And there is a line now in the developer's agreement that says that you will not use an intermediary compiler, that you have to write natively in one of the approved languages for the iPhone. So
now, the big problem with this is that there are some developers, if I remember correctly, with some pretty big name applications, some big games, who are using some sort of a development system that basically does exactly that. It's not Flash.
Yeah, there are a couple of other platforms, and it remains to be seen what those mean. Most people think that this is a stab at, but the other thing about it is that it also now says that if those apps have already been created, that they are no longer welcome in the App Store.
Yeah, wow. We're going to have to see how this plays out. And they can't single Flash out. I mean, if they make this rule, it's got to be all or nothing. They can't.
Yeah,
they can't pick apart just one developer.
That's just, so. It's really one of those. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the ad thing. Basically, so what Brian said is correct. Apple is going to serve out ads on your behalf, and you would get, if you are a publisher of an application, you will get 60% of the ad revenue. And now there are some interesting things, though. First of all, I think probably the most interesting thing about this is that if you click on the ad, it will not take you out of the application.
Well, first of all, do we think these are like banner ads? Do they like go over the bottom of the app or the top of the app? Or are they full page that kind of, they say it won't take you out of the application, but all that means is it's not going to close the application and open Safari.
Well, let me tell you what happened. Again, I got to watch the video, and they demoed, I think, three applications. I sat through two of them. No, I guess I saw the Target one, too. So the first one they did was for, and they made these up themselves. These apps, these ads don't actually exist yet, but they wanted to demo the system. So the first one was for Toy Story 3. Now, what it was is they had something that looked like an RSS reader, and then down at the very bottom, about the width of one of the RSS posts, there was like a little banner ad down at the bottom for Toy Story 3. So when you tap on that, it then comes up with a full screen ad with an Xbox in the upper left. At any time you click that and it goes away. So if you click on the ad, you're asking to see.
But it doesn't. It doesn't do it automatically. Is the question? It doesn't take over.
Correct.
And require interactivity, because that'd be the thing that I could imagine that would just drive me up a wall. Of course, would be that it would come along and say, "Okay, you've been, watching something or listening to something or playing something for 15 minutes. Here, look at this ad, and I have to interact with it in order to make it go away."
Correct. That is not at all how they demoed it today. I'm not saying that it doesn't do that. I'm saying that the way they described it indicates that it looks like it does not do that. The way they demoed it was you have to click on the ad. When you do, a full screen Toy Story ad came up, and it had a menu where you could click to look at the characters, and then you could swipe left and right through all of the, the Woody and the Buzz Lightyear, and you could hit the button and they would do their little catchphrases through the audio, and then back to the main menu. There was another one for there were video clips that would play in QuickTime, and you could have them in portrait or landscape, etc. There was a button for theaters, and if you click on that, it will show you the theaters in your area that are showing that movie, and you can tap on them, I presumably, to order tickets. I don't know. He didn't get into that. There was another button that would let you buy a game, a Toy Story 3 game, right there in the application. It would not take you out to the App Store. It would let you buy it right there from that page. Doesn't go anywhere. All of this, when you're done, you click that X, and it puts you right back into the application again. They also had a Nike ad, and they had a Target ad, and the ads were cool. They were very, very interactive ads, and it was kind of fun. Like, they had a game in one of them. I think it was, it might have been the Toy Story one. Nike had one where you could design your own tennis shoe. Target had one where you could design your own dorm room based on what school you go to, and it would insert, I think he used Michigan State as an example, and it would show you things you could buy from Target that are Michigan State wall hangings and couches and beanbag chairs and stuff. And so it looks like it's a little bit more robust. you could theoretically have it. I assume that they're going to do something where the ads would be targeted for the type of application that's being used, which would be kind of nice. And they don't just pop up and hijack your application.
It's interesting. And so because
the cool thing too is because it real quick, the fact that it doesn't leave the app. I mean, really, when you're browsing a web page, that's why you don't click on the apps or click on the ads. Is because if you click on one, you go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're not where you used to be, and getting back to where you were can be very difficult.
Right. But the interesting thing to me wasn't even how he said it was going to work. Hopefully that'll take care of itself. What he was talking about is he actually gave some numbers out there, and I wrote this down, and I'm having a hard time believing I wrote it down right. I knew I wrote the first part down right, but did he say that they expected that they could generate 1 billion impressions a day? That's what I wrote down. I know he said 1 billion impressions, but did he actually say per day?
I believe he said, yeah, I think so, because they were saying that an average person uses an app for, uses apps, I think, for like 15 minutes a day or something like that. And so if you did 1 app every 5 minutes or 1 ad every 5 minutes, and then he did the math based on how many iPhones have been sold.
That's astounding. And if you figure that, then they're going to get 40% of every one of those sold impressions. That's a substantial amount of money.
Yeah.
I mean, Google makes, you know, that's how Google makes everything free. I mean, Google has just everybody thinks of Google as in the free software business, and they give stuff away, and they do, but they still make money hand over fist because they've got a gazillion dollars a day in ad revenue. Well, if you figure that Apple can do that sort of traffic with 1 billion impressions per day, and you get, you know, some, you know, you get some CPM of you know, some reasonable amount of CPM, that's a ton of money.
I was about to say, that's not a significant amount of money. That's a crap ton of money.
And do you get to a situation then where you start subsidizing the other way? Remember, we always talk about we always thought Google was we were hopeful that Google was going to give us an ad supported internet device. You know, we were kind of you know, we're talking about that when they were doing the idea of buying the spectrum and whatever else, and they turns out they probably could afford to do that. They didn't do it with the Nexus One, but if you think about, let's say Apple stands to make, you know, $900 or $1,000 off of every device because of ad sales, wouldn't they give us a $300 device for free if they're going to make another $1,000 on it, and they could get more of them out there?
They could subsidize the price of the devices with this. And yeah, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get anything free, but.
I think one of the questions is, you know, the ads they showed us were made by Apple. They were made to be very interactive, to use the fullest extent of what they could do.
Right.
Are we going to see those kind of ads from ad agencies?
Well, I think that what's going to happen, now again, these are using HTML5, so it's what is trying to be an industry standard for the actual coding of the ads.
Well, it is a standard.
Yeah, I think that we're going
to see. It is an industry standard as opposed to a de facto standard or a proprietary standard Flash.
Right. So there are some really impressive ads out there on the internet, and I think the big companies like Pixar and Nike and Target and Walmart and places like that are going to have some pretty spiffy ads, and I think that the smaller people will do what they can. And that's fine. But, you know, I think that, I don't know. I don't think a lot of people are going to spend a lot of time in the ads. And it all depends. If you want to make something really highly interactive, then, yeah, it's going to take you more money in developing it. But people are going to spend more time on your ad. If you make your ad a game, then, yeah, people are going to stay there longer than 3 seconds.
Well, you know, this is also a question of careful what you ask for, too. We've been asking for multitasking for a long time on the iPhone, and now we have basically ads that are basically apps running with your app running in the background. They couldn't do that before multitasking.
And how long until we get the first Punch the Monkey ad on the on a banner on the
iPhone? Well, I mean, yeah, that's a actually kind of a good question. Anyway, the ad thing. So a lot of people are worried that this is going to just overwhelm the iPhone. You're going to get ads everywhere. I don't think that's the case. I think that what's going to happen is you are still going to have people who are saying, listen, if you pay for our app, we don't put ads in it. And I think that, that's a benefit that those developers are going to pass on to the users. And likewise, I think that the users who are more concerned about prices and don't like these $10 apps for their iPads, I think this is how they're going to get good quality apps from developers who are willing to put a lot of time and effort into their development, and they're going to subsidize it with the ads. So I don't necessarily think this is a problem. A lot of people are panicking because they're like, oh my gosh, Apple's going to, you know, just bombard us with this stuff. Let's just hold off on judgment until we see how it's actually going to happen and how it's going to be implemented.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be that big of a problem. So we need to wrap up pretty soon. A couple of last minute things here. Some of the other miscellaneous items, we talked about the wallpaper already. And there are a few other things that they did mention. SMS access directly from within apps. You can also access the photo application to take photos or video. And also the photo application is going to support places and geotagging. And also faces, apparently. This wasn't covered in the announcement, but the developers went through and saw that faces will be supported in the photo app.
Now, the question is, will that be tagged so that, like, if you export them from iPhoto that already has faces in it, or is it actually going to be able to do the face recognition itself?
That always makes people nervous.
Based on the screen that I saw, I believe it did it itself. Now, keep in mind, this is something you go in as a user and you assign names to all of these faces. This does not positively identify anybody as anything.
Yeah.
I can tell my computer that Jeff is Bugs Bunny, and anytime I take a picture of Jeff, it's going to label him Bugs Bunny. That's not necessarily a privacy problem or anything like that.
I mean, so much like many other people in real life.
Yeah. Unless you think, you know, hey, I'm trying to keep track of this certain person, and depending on how good it is, imagine being able to take a picture of a crowd and surreptitiously with your iPhone rather than studying it with your face and then having it go, oh yeah, the person's over there. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how good it is.
You know, if you care that much about that, the software probably already exists for that anyway.
It most certainly does.
Not a lot of it's in public hands. That's the difference.
Well, we'll see how it's actually implemented. It might not.
Google has said through back channels that they can do this with stuff on Picasa. They're just not doing it at this point. So, it's definitely out there and available if you want to do it.
Google Goggles supposedly can already do this. They just choose not to do faces.
Actually, you know, come to think of it, it does it in Picasa. It's not in Goggles. It was the trick. So
yeah, it does face recognition in Picasa.
Yeah.
So we'll see how this is actually implemented. Don't freak out about privacy concerns yet. It might not be an issue. It could be, but it might not be. Let's wait until it shows up.
If it freaks you out right now, then you should be freaked out anyway, because it's already out there. yeah. Privacy's dead.
So. Not here, but everywhere else. Yeah. Let's see what else. We have a spell checker that's more robust than the current typing replacement system. I saw a couple of pictures of that, and it looks pretty impressive. Creating playlists. This is awesome. This is something that already exists on the iPad, and I'm kind of stoked about that. And the other thing, I don't know how many people will care about it, but if you've been itching to get a Bluetooth keyboard for your iPhone, then you probably purchased an iPad this weekend. But if you didn't, you can now do Bluetooth on your keyboard.
I ran across this, and I put it in the back channel. I thought it was very impressive. Think of it as, you know, somebody makes a case that has an extended battery and has a built-in Bluetooth slide-out keyboard. You know, and effectively, you've got slide-out keyboard for the iPhone. Yeah. You know, which is what people have been dying for years at this point.
And that's a good point. I bet.
I think that could make a lot of money, to be frank with you. Especially
that's a really
good
point.
Especially since now you have options, different keyboards that you can get. Like, one of the reasons I don't have a Droid already is because I don't like the keyboard. I like the idea of having a physical keyboard, but I don't like that particular keyboard. So people can put out multiple different types of keyboards that, you know, if you like the flat ones or you like the button ones, you like the buttons that are seamless or next to each other, yada, yada, yada. You've got a lot of different options there. So that could be a growth industry, frankly.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, we've got to wrap this up. So a couple of last minute things here. This is due out in, well, they say this summer. I'm going to say June because that's generally when they seem to be doing this. It's going to be probably June for the iPhone. It's due this fall for the iPad. And some people are wondering, well, why isn't the iPad going to get any of this until the fall? The truth is the iPad has some of this already. Especially the smaller stuff like the wallpaper, the ability to create playlists, obviously the Bluetooth keyboard, things like that. So some of it it's got already, and we'll see what they mean by fall. Maybe we'll luck out and it'll be early fall. The iPhone 3GS and the current generation of iPod Touch will get full functionality, but the first and second generation iPhones, which includes the iPhone 3G, and the first generation iPod Touch will not get all of it. Specifically, they will not get multitasking. And the reason is the hardware just isn't good enough to support it.
Hardware red, not enough memory is basically what it comes down to. 128 megs of RAM is not enough to do this with.
So, sadly, for those users out there, if you want that functionality, this might be a time to consider upgrading. Those will end up being two-year-old devices, at least, by that point. Not until
I see that, yeah. And when I see the new hardware, then we'll make a decision.
Yeah, no. Yeah, don't just, you know, sell the farm quite yet. But if these features are things that are important to you...
You don't want me to delete my Facebook profile just yet?
Dude, have you seen that episode of South Park?
Yes, I did. I saw it this afternoon.
Oh, my gosh, best South Park ever. I felt like it was me talking through this episode.
It was
okay,
awesome.
I have difficulty believing that it surpasses some of the other ones that you have spoken so highly of.
It wasn't the best ever. It was good. It was good for Eric because it ragged on Facebook. Yeah.
If you download this from iTunes or watch it on your TiVo or something like that, Jeff, you should go find this episode. If you watch this episode, you will understand what I'm talking about and why it speaks to me personally and why this episode of South Park represents me. They had me at Facebook.
Poke your grandmother.
That was so awesome.
Poke your grandmother, young man. Anyway.
All right. Is there any other last minute things? We have like about 30 seconds before two of our guys have to leave here. Is there anything else we want to throw in before we sign off?
I think we covered it all.
I'll take the deer in the headlights.
I'll throw one thing in here.
No.
Okay. It's been nice, Apple, but unless you give me some really cool hardware in June, I'm out of here. So just a message to Apple from me. So.
Wow.
You hardware purists,
you know what?
I tell you.
Good riddance. You fair weather fans, man.
Wow.
We will see. I mean, I've really enjoyed having an iPhone. I've said on Tech Chatter many times, and I'm lusting after Android at this point. We'll see what the new hardware is going to look like. You know, not making any decisions until June when the HTC Evo comes out. But
I understand, and you know, those are good phones. We talked about that on Tech Chatter too. I'm not dissing any of the other phones. I'm just saying that overall, I'm more concerned about the experience than I am the specs. So we'll see what Apple comes out with this summer. They'll have something, I'm sure.
And I've got to think it's going to be a pretty good phone this summer when it comes out.
I have every expectation that it will be. Apple is not a bunch of idiots.
Apple knows what they're up against. They know what they're up against. So, all right, well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we look forward to hearing from you. If you'd like to contact us, you can contact us at podcast@appchatter.com. And don't forget to hit the website, appchatter.com. There's lots of good news and reviews there, and there's some information about the iPhone 4.0 as well. Like I said, we did not cover everything. But hopefully you enjoyed the show. And Brian and Jeff, it was good having you guys on as guests.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us.
We'll have to continue to get you guys on when possible. So, and both Brian and Jeff are on Tech Chatter, which is part of the Random Chatter Podcast Network over at randomchatter.com. And let's see what else. I'm kind of liking this live show thing. I think we might do this more often. So if you guys want to hang out for live shows, be sure to follow us on Twitter. I would advise you to follow both the App Chatter Twitter account and the Random Chatter Twitter account. I personally post to the Random Chatter account, and any notifications about live shows will go there. That'll probably be the first notification of them. So, thanks for everybody who's hanging out in the chat room. This is very cool. It was fun being able to get some live feedback as we're recording. And I think we might make that a regular thing. So, We will have the link for that up too. It's going to be at ustream.tv/channel/randomchatter, and that's where all the Random Chatter Network shows are going to be held. Anything else we want to cover? I think that's probably it.
I think we're good.
So next week's show might be a little bit late because we did two shows this week. We'll see how it goes. So just stay tuned. And like I said, check out appchatter.com for more app news and reviews. And we will see you guys next week.
See you later. Bye,
everybody.
Good night.
For more great app reviews, check out appchatter.com. The songs in this episode are My Own Little World and Unlikely, both written and performed by Cell Dweller, which you can find at celldweller.com. The show is part of the Random Chatter Podcast Network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. This show is copyright 2010 appchatter.com, and as silly as a sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care.